welcome to This Liminal Life podcast. This is the very first episode of This Liminal Life. Living between the already and the not yet, recognizing that we are here as Christians and we are not yet in heaven with the Lord. My name is Brian Holt. With me here in our bedroom / studio is my awesome wife, Rebecca.
Hi.
So this is a idea that we've spawned. I listen to a lot of podcasts as I go about my life and thought, hey, why not start a podcast of our own where we talk about life and we talk about church and children and all the things that matter to us. So first off, I thought we'd tell a little bit about who we are. So Rebecca, do you want to introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Rebecca Holt, and I'm not sure where to begin. I was born in Colorado. I was born into a large family with wonderful Christian parents, and then we moved to Virginia when I was 9, and I was homeschooled for periods of time and ended up graduating from a public high school. And then went off to college to study German and education, and that's when I met Brian, and I thought I was gonna be a missionary to Germany and to Austria. I really loved the German language, was very passionate about it, but I was also very passionate about family, and the Lord just really was calling me into a marriage and to family. And so I married Brian when I was 21 and really desired to have a family. I was going to go into teaching and use my degree, and started to get very sick, and we realized we were expecting our first child. So plans changed, and I became a stay-at-home mom very quickly, and we have 4 little ones now. And so I, I wear a lot of different hats. I'm a homemaker.
And you wear them all well.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but, yeah, a mom and a wife and a pastor's wife and a friend and a daughter. And, it's been a wild ride, but it's been good.
All right. Well, cool. My name is Brian Holt, as I said, and I grew up kind of in Powhatan County, right where we live now, and went away to college and met my lovely wife, and I was in a band in college and after college, and that kept us around the Fredericksburg area for about 6 years after I graduated school, and then we decided to move down to Powhatan, back to home where I grew up, to pursue a call to ministry. Spent a couple years at one particular church and did an internship there, and then, long story short, ended up becoming the pastor where I currently serve at Emmaus Christian Church. I am the senior pastor, the junior pastor, the youth pastor, the worship pastor, pretty much wear a lot of hats there as well. We're a small congregation of about between 40 and 80 on a Sunday. And it's just a great group of folks who love the Lord and want to serve Him and see their lives just have an impact on people around them through the gospel. So that's what we do. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about what the purpose of this podcast is. So what do you think you want to articulate, or what do you think people want to hear?
Well, I think people really want honesty. You know, even among Christians, where we prize people being vulnerable and being honest, it's still hard to find transparency. And life is hard, and difficult things happen, and we tend to want to hide. And I can understand wanting to hide. But then we walk around, I think, with a lot of questions. You know, we often think, do other people have these fears? Am I the only one who thinks this way? Or, you know, what happens in other people's lives other than seeing them on Sunday morning or when I run into them at Chick-fil-A and they look so put together or, you know, whatever. So I think, you know, one of the purposes of this podcast could be just you and I opening up about life and its challenges and marriage and ministry and raising children and this awesome God that we serve. And, you know, hopefully people would be encouraged by our struggles and know that they're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's plays a lot into what my purpose is too, a place to be honest, a place to be real about who we are and what we've been through. I think a lot of times people expect pastors and pastors' wives to be kind of perfect and put together, to have all their ducks in a row. And, you know, while there are certainly qualifications in Scripture for pastors, and none of it is to be perfect. And I want to be this to be a place where we can be as vulnerable as possible and let people know that yeah, we are real people and we struggle and we have things that we wrestle with on a daily basis, just the balancing life and ministry and children and football and all the things that we do. And it's not always hard. It's not always easy. It definitely is most of the time hard. But it is joyful, and it is an opportunity for us to see God's work go forth in this place. And so, yeah, I think that's hopefully what we're able to do. I hope if you listen to this, you're encouraged by that and that you really get something out of it. If anything, just enjoy a conversation. So I thought we'd talk a little bit, first off, about how we met. There's quite a story, at least in our opinion, about how we met as a couple. And I thought we would just share a little bit about that. And I don't know if you want to start, Rebecca. You can be the first one to say that.
Well, I think we have a great story. It's like every story, you know, it has its funny parts and awkward parts and, you know, but behind it all, I just see the Lord, just sovereignly bringing us together and giving us a heart for marriage and a desire to, you know, do it right, whatever right maybe is. But I came into college actually having no thoughts of a relationship. I didn't intend to meet my husband in college. I was a fairly serious teenager. I just, being the oldest girl of 8 children, and I spent a lot of time at home with my mom. I wouldn't say I was your typical teen, so I was thinking big thoughts about life, and my parents certainly didn't have a perfect marriage, but they really seemed to understand their roles, as I see laid out in Scripture. Again, you know, my upbringing wasn't perfect, and I wasn't a perfect teen, but I was approaching life fairly seriously, so you know, my goals were to be a great college student and head off to the mission field. So I just didn't intend to meet Brian, and the Lord just sort of changed all that up because I met Brian. I guess it was at a InterVarsity Christian Fellowship ice cream social, and it was for the freshmen, and I was a freshman and he was a sophomore. And there were a lot of people there, and some of those people, a lot of them actually, we still keep in touch with. So it ended up being a great group of people. And I didn't really walk away having this major crush on Brian. I was just really excited about everybody that I had met. Being in a public high school, at least the one I went to, there just were not many Christians. It was a very lonely experience.
Wait, so you're saying you went to a public high school?
Yes.
And you're still a Christian?
Yes.
Wow, that's cool. Okay, go on.
Yes, we had I don't even know if we had FCA. I don't remember that. I know there was Young Life and there are some believers there. I wasn't super close to them, but anyway, yeah, so when I did meet him, I knew I liked him. He had a great personality, but I didn't have a huge crush on him. So, but you may have some other memories from that night.
Well, I remember that you told me you hated me.
I didn't mean it, you know, and I was joking. I found out he had horses, and see, I had loved horses growing up. I always wanted a horse, and I loved horses. They were so beautiful. But there was just no way my family was going to have a horse with 8 children. We didn't live on a farm. We lived in the suburbs, and there was just, you know, it was too expensive, too time-consuming. And so when I found he had a horse, I just jokingly said, oh, I hate you. But he thought that was funny.
It cut me deep. It cut me very deep. No, I remember that conversation very vividly. I don't remember much of what we talked about, but I remember I actually was the DJ of the night. I was a sophomore, and the InterVarsity social, it was a freshman ice cream social, and we had it the Saturday before school started for the freshmen, and I was there early to help freshmen move in, and I was also helping put together this party, and I was the DJ for the night, and I remember putting on a Steve Miller song, and you didn't know who that was, and I berated you.
I still don't know who he is, or really anybody who
it was the
plays
Joker.
Music is. So.
Some people call me the Space Cowboy. Yeah. She didn't know who the Joker was. She didn't know who Steve Miller was. So I kind of berated her for that, and then she told me she hated me because I grew up riding horses. But we had a great conversation, and I remember... I actually hit on her friend Katie first. I wasn't really interested in her, but we really had a great conversation. I was more into blondes at that point in my life.
Which is a joke that still comes up from time to time.
And all of our children are blonde, so it kind of worked out. So anyway, yeah, so we had a great conversation that night. And then as you were leaving, your friends told you something very interesting. What did they tell you?
I think they said that I shouldn't ever hang out with you because you didn't even look like a Christian.
And I've always wanted to ask them, what does a Christian look like? Do you remember what I did look like?
No, I mean, I just remember you had some shirt with like a cartoon character. And I mean, you looked pretty normal to me. So I didn't take what they said to heart.
I knew I was wearing big JNCO pants. Remember those big, really...
Yeah, I think so.
Huge, huge legged pants.
Yeah, I'm glad they're not in style anymore.
Although I think they're better than skinny jeans.
No way. I love skinny jeans.
But not on me. No, yeah, I've always wondered what a Christian would look like. And I was actually kind of glad, though, that I didn't look like a Christian. Because I think I'd prefer to not look like a Christian. Because in my opinion, Christians were dorks. Oh man, no, that was a fun night. We met a lot of friends that night. I think I met John Ramirez and Katie Preston and
some of our best friends from college were there. It wasn't necessarily a pivotal night, but when I look back and I can remember faces from that night, I just remember, like, even now, just thinking those were some of the neatest people we met.
Yeah, no doubt, still are some great folks that. Still keep in touch with, not as much as we'd like to, but certainly some awesome folks. So yeah, so that's kind of how we met. Maybe in future podcasts, if we have another one of these, we'll talk about other stories about our dating relationship, as it were, and get into those types of things too. But I thought we'd talk about a topic of discussion, just something that's, I don't know, pertinent to what's going on in our lives right now. Is there anything that comes to your mind or anything that you've thought of or discussing? Yeah.
Well, right now we're in the summertime right now, and so we are just enjoying family times and staying in our pajamas until noon and then heading off to the pool or to the kids are really loving this skate park, which is just about maybe 10 minutes from our home. And so we're just doing all kinds of things. And I'm trying to do some reading when I can. I just don't do a ton of reading during the school year, but I've sort of got three books that I'm reading currently, and I'm really trying to make them through it all. I've actually finished one, but I regularly read this book by Dr. Dobson called Bringing Up Boys, and I was given this book by, it was from my mom after I had our second son, and I just regularly read this book to help me understand boys, and how to raise them and the way that they're wired. And so every time I read it, it's just another reminder of the stage maybe that my sons are in, and how to reach them, and how to show them grace, because I'm not a boy, so I don't understand maybe some of the things that they do, and I need to understand those things. And so I've finished reading that. And I've actually moved on to reading Bringing Up Girls, also by Dr. Dobson. I had never read that before, and we also have two girls, and so I sort of have my work cut out for me with both the boys and the girls. So that's kind of what I'm reading right now. I'm also finishing up a book by Piper, John Piper, called Don't Waste Your Life. And I've read it before, and I'm rereading it, and I just, there's sort of a question I've sort of had lingering in my mind about this particular book, because it's such a challenging book, and we can maybe talk about it in a minute, but, you know, I just have got a lot of questions kind of coming to the surface as I, read through it.
What's one of the most challenging things that you've read or gotten from the book?
You mean from the Piper book?
Yeah.
Well, he's talking about obviously not wasting your life. And, you know, the question that I kind of have that just keeps coming up is, he really just sort of encourages this warlike mentality, where in war you ask different questions and you approach life differently. And in times of peace, you live differently than in times of war. And so I totally get what he's saying, and where he wants us to go. I think the struggle that I have is I can see that there's war before me. I feel like I'm warring for the souls of my children. I feel like I have a war before me for my own soul. You know, do I pursue the Lord like I'm supposed to? Am I investing in our marriage in a way that brings glory to God, the way that He wants me to, that God wants me to? You know, am I just going along with the current of our culture more than I should? I mean, and you know, and those are good questions to ask. And am I actually doing anything that matters? So the conflict in my heart when I begin to think and wrestle with those things is, what about just living faithfully?
Mm-hmm.
I may not be called to risk everything and go overseas and be a missionary like maybe I thought I was called to do, you know, 15, right, 20 years ago. But what about just living out faithfully what he's called me to do as a wife? You know, is there risk in that? And I would have to say, yes, there is. But I don't know if I'm reading the book correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I so many times when Paul is addressing the churches, there are big things that are going on in some churches, whether it's heresy or they're being attacked and being plundered by unbelievers, or, you know, whatever their situation is. Some of the churches had real genuine need. But in a lot of those epistles, he's also calling them to simply live godly lives,
yeah,
and faithful lives, whether it's tithing or children honoring their parents, and wives and husbands loving one another. And I'm thinking, no, that's not necessarily risking everything. Maybe it's wartime. You know, there's a mentality in all of that that would be a wartime mentality. I don't know. I'm kind of wrestling with, am I getting what John Piper wants me as a reader to get, and how does that measure up to Scripture?
Right. Okay. Well, I haven't read it, so I can't help you at
That's
all
okay.
in that process. But are there anything that specifically that you're trying to take from that and apply it to life as a mom with, you know, taking Mike at a football practice in the evenings, or, you know, anything practical that you're able to think about differently? Has it changed any of that?
Well, I think on a day-to-day basis, you know, there's just certain things that a mom has to do. You know, you have to get up in the morning, you have to do laundry, you have to make your kids meals, and you have to discipline and take care of the yard. And there's so many practical things that need my attention, and that's just the way that it is. But I think there's a focus and an allegiance to the Lord that might cause me to burn within differently, instead of just going through the motions of the day. And, you know, where's my heart? Where is, what am I passionate about? What am I really seeking here? And at the end of the day, has the Lord been my passion, or has it just been doing things?
So it's not necessarily changing the things that you do as much as it is changing your heart as you do them. And kind
well,
of your motivation, in a sense.
Yeah, and I think, well, because he talks a lot about taking risks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been challenged because I like my comfort. You know, I like my home. I like things to be orderly. I like my coffee in the morning. You know, I like certain things that bring me comfort. And so when I take risks, you know, sometimes I have to ask myself, you know, do I just like my comfort too much? Or, you know, when I find myself in a place where I'm not comfortable, do I not want to do it because it's really not what I'm supposed to be doing? Or is it because I just like my comfort?
Right.
So, you know, those are things that, you know, could force me to make changes throughout the day.
Cool. Well, that's pretty interesting, deep. I'll have to read that book sometime.
Yeah.
I figured I read the title. It said, "Don't waste your life," and I was like, "Okay, cool. I've got it. I got the gist of the book.
There you go.
Good to go." Thank you, John Piper. No, that's good. One thing I love about you is how deeply you think about things, and the way that you very. Very little of what you say is just off the cuff or not thought out or planned or anything like that. So, yeah. Well, cool. Did you want to talk about something fun and light,
sure.
Maybe?
Sounds good.
Let's talk about football. So, I married into a football family.
Yes. Guilty.
So, I actually grew up, I loved playing football with, you know, in the yard out with friends growing up in Brander Mill. There was a lot of people around, a lot of kids, and we played football. But I actually was never allowed to play football because the too many injuries and things like that. So I didn't grow up in a football family. And then I went to a high school that didn't have a football team. So I liked watching football on TV. I really didn't ever have a team so much. But I guess I kind of liked the Redskins for a little while, but I grew it. I married into a Denver Bronco fan.
Yes.
Family. So tell me a little bit about your Bronco heritage.
Well, yes, my family is extremely serious about the NFL. I realize that college is out there and it's very explosive, but it's really f college football, I've realized, is really fast. And I don't know if it's just because they're younger or it's just played differently. I don't know. Not, studied enough to know about what makes them all completely different. But yes, I did grow up. I have these memories that go way back. And I couldn't have been more than a few years old. And we're watching a Denver Broncos game. It's in like the early 80s. And Elway had just come on as the quarterback. And I think he
Wait,
came.
who's Elway?
Okay, so John Elway. Oh my gosh. Everybody knows who Elway is. Anyway, they scored a touchdown, and my home just explodes. And my dad had his friends over. And I don't remember what my other, brothers and sisters were doing. But I have so many memories of Sunday after Sunday during the fall and early winter of my family gathering around and eating nachos
I can get down with that.
and watching our Broncos. So yes, we are passionate about the Broncos.
Yes. And I have become passionate about the Broncos as well. I enjoyed when we were dating. I would come in and see the guys, your younger brothers watching the Broncos game, and I'd say, "Oh, look, the Broncos are on. What high school are they playing this week?" And I'd always tease them and they'd threaten to beat me up, but not that they could ever could because they were smaller than me, but that was always fun. But now I certainly, I've been indoctrinated into the Broncos family. I've been to Denver now and loved it. And yeah, so it's pretty cool. And now this year, our son Micah, our oldest, who's 11, has been begging us for how many years now?
He's been begging for about 2 years to play.
2 years he's wanted to play football. They've been playing soccer for
6 years.
Six seasons, I guess.
No, more than 6 seasons. 6 years total, but
Wow.
so.
Yeah, for a long time. So we started on playing soccer, mostly because it's the cheapest sport to play and it's the least time commitment
There's
'cause
no travel. It wasn't travel. It's just rec.
yeah, so it was easy, and so we started playing soccer, and then Micah got really into football, and he's a huge Green Bay Packers fan.
Which is very cool because my grandfather, Pop, who Micah has never met, so this is Micah's great grandfather, he grew up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. And my dad grew up cheering for the Green Bay Packers because of his dad. And then when he moved to Colorado, I guess he switched and became a Broncos fan. So Mike actually has Green Bay Packer heritage. He just didn't know it.
He's got roots. Yeah, that's cool. So he loves it, and he's even requested Clay Matthews' number. Is that right? And
Yes.
he's got it. So he's fired up that he's gonna wear Clay Matthews 52, I think, right?
Yes, I think so.
This season, and so far he's had 2 weeks of practice, and they started hitting this week and started doing running plays and stuff, and he's absolutely loving it. It looks like they're gonna have him kicking some, so.
Yeah.
He and I have been working on that out in the yard, just working on his kicking, and yeah, he's really taken to it, and Lord willing, he'll have a good season. I think it's might be a toughening experience for him at some level.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't actually gotten to the games, but you were talking about humor, something funny, and there is something so funny on the football field,
Tell
which,
him your story.
oh my gosh,
This
this
is
is.
confession time with
Yes.
Rebecca.
I didn't expect this at all, but I could not stop laughing the first week. So they divide the kids into three groups based on their age. In this particular league, they don't divide them based on weight, not yet, or they may move in that direction, but not this year. And so Mike is in the middle. He's on the junior team. And then there's the minors, which are, I think, 8 and 9 year olds. And then there's the seniors, which is the oldest group. And so it's conditioning. The first week is conditioning, and everybody's dying because they've been couch potatoes all summer, and now all of a sudden conditioning and football hits Monday through Friday every evening, and they go hard. So I'm just watching my son taking it all in, and he's loving it. And I happen to look over to the minors and they're conditioning by themselves at this point. They kind of start as a whole group. They stretch together and then they divide into their groups. And I look over at this minors team and there's this one little boy who, when he starts to run, like they're doing sprints and everything, he does the shuffle. He doesn't even run. And I couldn't believe this boy looked like that. It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And I thought it was just me. And so I'm trying not to laugh because I thought I don't want to offend his mom if his mom is around me. And then I notice other people are laughing and talking and everybody's like trying to keep it to themselves, but it is so funny. And so I tell Brian about it later, and then eventually, like another light, I videotape it with my phone. Like I record it on my phone. I'm hoping nobody's watching me, but I just want Brian to see how funny the shuffle is. So anyway, we're way into our third week, and I am still laughing at this kid who can't seem to run.
Not only you, but all the mothers who sit with you.
I know.
Are all laughing at this poor child.
I know. I'm trying.
And it's not like he can't run, because we talked to somebody who coached him before.
That's right.
And he said that if there's a flag in front of him, because he played flag football, that he would get more flags than anybody, but he just didn't have the motivation at practice, it seems.
Oh, he
to
just
really
like,
pick his legs
he just
up.
Walks. Like when they have to do the whole lap, he just decides he's gonna walk. But it's actually not just the walk, it's the way he
it's a shuffle. It's a straight knee.
It is so funny.
It is straight legged and it's like he's power walking. I think technically he is walking because there is a foot on the ground at all times. I mean, it is hilarious, especially when he's wearing pads and a helmet.
Well, and when he tries to look around to see if there's anyone else running with him, he can't look because the shoulder pads are all the way up to his ears. And mm-hmm. So there's the shuffle, and then there's the huge pads, and then he can't actually turn his head. So, yeah.
And then there's you on the sidelines laughing at him.
I know. It's awful. It's awful. I finally confessed to my kids, and one of my kids' mouths just dropped. They couldn't believe that I was laughing at a child that way, but
that's so
it was funny.
Oh goodness. Well, I'm that was good to talk about some football. I wanted to talk about one more topic of discussion, kind of get serious again. And I've been thinking about this. There's a couple different things that were floating around in my mind, but I figured this is as good a time as any to bring this one out. I wanted to share a little bit as we're something that I've never really talked about publicly, an experience that I had with a pedophile. And you know the story, Rebecca.
Yes.
I was in high school, growing up, went to a church, that we loved, still good friends there. And there was this one guy who was very involved in the youth. He was kind of like our youth pastor, and he helped out with all that was going on, and he had us over to his house a lot. He was a single guy. He was kind of a guy's guy. He played baseball in college, and he was a baseball coach and really did a lot athletically and all that stuff. And we loved him. And you know, we used to go over and spend the night at his house and play poker and do all kinds of, different things and watch movies and all that. And, really in a lot of ways, he was our savior. I think, he was the kind of the guy who was our spiritual leader. And really, I mean, there's a lot that I learned from this guy. There's a lot about life and about sin, about God's goodness that I learned through him. And in a lot of ways, I feel there was a period of time where he actually kind of replaced my father in my life, at least in my affections at some level. Something that I really, really regret looking back. But he kind of took us in. I mean, really, I guess looking back and hearing what I've heard now about pedophiles, they really know how to groom people and, you know, very well-loved people, and this guy was very well-loved. And I remember my parents going to a church meeting when I was 15 and coming back and sitting me and my brother down and telling us that this man had been arrested, that he turned himself in for indecent liberties with a minor, for he had abused a kid in church. And so they started asking us all these questions about, has he ever touched you? Has he ever done anything to you? And looking back, there was nothing that was ever really off or nothing explicit, but there were lots of little things about the way that our interactions were. There was a lot of infatuation with the male body part, just in jokes. We used to joke a lot about, you know, the male body part. A lot of like crude joking about things, and just stuff that we thought was just kind of guys stuff. It was locker room talk. And then there were some a couple times where he made some strange comments to us that really, you know, it was just kind of like, that was just weird. And then looking back, it kind of makes sense. But there was one time actually that he shared with me a story about a guy who had homosexual thoughts and had problems with those types of things, and traded sex for rides, and was just all kinds of trouble, where he was just very sexually active, and then shared with me how this person had become a Christian and how they were changed and all this stuff. And I remember thinking at the time, wow, that's kind of a crazy story. That's really far out there. But looking back, recognizing, I think that he was telling me about his own story and his own life. So that was just one of those things that now as a pastor, it's been really interesting to think about those things, and you know, as a father dealing with people in the church and all that stuff, and wanting to protect our children. It's just something that I never really realized would play such a big part of my life. And so I know that's a little bit maybe out of left field, but since we wanted to be kind of honest and open, I wanted to share that and share that in specific way, because I'm not sure how to respond. I'm not sure if I ever saw this guy, what I would do, you know, what I would say if I ever came across him. I mean, he knows where my parents live, and we've talked about that with them, and them saying, yeah, he knows where they live. I don't know what I'd do if he ever showed up. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? Like, how should I be thinking through that process? Because I'm not sure I've ever, I don't know that I'll ever meet him again, but, and apparently he's completely unrepentant. He doesn't feel like he ever did anything wrong. So it's not like he is coming and saying, yeah, I did something wrong. He thinks that he was okay and justified, and he had his reasoning for doing what he did, and just kind of owning his sin in a way that he's okay with it. So I don't know. We've talked about this a lot, but
yeah, I think I don't know. I don't know if I was just naive growing up, and even as a young adult, it's just not something I thought about very much, and I think it's because I always felt safe. I always felt safe with my family, and even in college, it wasn't an urban campus, and so, you know, I felt very safe on our campus. And then, you know, I got married, and we had our children so quickly that we weren't really out doing things, and we weren't places where, you know, I would feel vulnerable, or just because our kids were so little, they needed to be at home and in bed. But I think as I have gotten older, I have become wiser to the possibilities out there, you know, that our world is not safe, that there are those kinds of people out there. I don't think I thought that there were. I mean, I don't know what I thought. I just didn't think that those people were there. And as we have talked more about it in our marriage, and we've talked about it, you know, about the needs for safety in our church and safety measures to be taken. I think I've become more aware of the need for just wisdom in the world that we live in. I have this memory of talking to a lady, a mom like me. She had moved into the Fredericksburg area, and one of the first things she did when she and her husband were looking for homes was to see if each of the homes that they were looking at, if on that road or anywhere nearby, a sex offender popped up in her search. And I remember thinking, wow, is that normal? Like, is that what you're supposed to be doing as a mom or as parents? Like, is that what makes you a good, you know, protective parent? Because I had just never thought about that, which, you know, I think you could go to two extremes. You could be completely ignorant and then be taken in and be very vulnerable because of just lack of wisdom. And then I think you could be on the other extreme where you just think there's a sex offender hiding behind every bush. And, but you know, it's just something I think I've had to grapple with a little bit more because of your experience and the reality, of it and the sadness of it.
Yeah. I mean, we slept in this guy's bed. You know, it didn't seem weird then. It sounds weird saying it. But looking back, you know, I guess I don't know what reaction to have. I mean, because I've seen people go on the far extreme of that, yeah, that mentality that there's a sex offender behind every rock and you're afraid of people. But balancing that with a trust in the Lord and trusting that God is sovereign and that he's in control. It's just hard to find that place. And so I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I sort of surprised myself a little bit because when we came to the church where we are at now, I didn't know anybody. And I remember, there were many, many, many Sundays where I didn't know where my kids were in the church. And, I would have these absolute moments of panic because I realized that while we were in a church building, it didn't mean that my children were necessarily safe.
Right.
And some of that was because I was ignorant of the people who were there. And so the assumption on my part was maybe this was bad, but the assumption on my part was you're not safe until I know you. Mm-hmm. And you're not safe with my children until I know you.
Right.
And so I would sometimes hunt the children down and find them just so I knew that they weren't in a room with some person. And, you know, fortunately they never were. And we've come to know and respect a lot of the people at our church. But, you know, I've often put myself in the position of like maybe a visiting parent. If there was someone visiting at our church, you know, and if they felt that way and they felt like they needed to keep their child with them, I think I can respect that and understand that.
Right.
And I just think that there's a growing sort of awareness among parents, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like one of those things where it's this sad state of affairs that we live in, but it's the reality of our times, that those things are real. And yet sometimes I wonder, you know, why the Lord protected me and my brothers and our friends when there are several children, who grew up to be adults. You know, there's one in particular apparently who just has been in all kinds of, psychiatric hospitals and has just never recovered from the trauma that he experienced at this man's hands. And there's a sense that, wow, the Lord really protected us. And so I want to have that same faith that God's going to protect our children, but not go into it blindly, not be foolish about how we, you know, who our kids hang out with, you know, because you can smother them and they can rebel and do all kinds of stuff, you know, of their own accord and cause all kinds of turmoil. Or you might also be too free with them and they get hurt by someone else. So yeah, I think that's just something I wanted to talk about and share. So do you want to finish on kind of a light note maybe?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if this is a light note, but we should talk about the show that we've been watching on Netflix.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not light at all.
It's not at all light. I go to bed and my mind keeps turning for another hour and I'm kind of scared. But, you know, then I remember that the Lord is with me. Sometimes I end up singing some of those little children's songs, you know, because it just helps me to calm down. And but it is a good, it is an interesting show.
All right. So what's it called?
Okay. So we are Christians. And we do love Jesus, but we also watch this show called The Killing. It's on Netflix, and we don't have cable, and I like it that way, but then we choose to watch something called The Killing.
Yeah. So this show is, it is crazy in the sense that we love mysteries, right? So we love
mysteries, and we love boring mysteries too. Boring, I should say, is in so like the older kind, like Miss Marple by Agatha Christie, and you know, just we love anything as long as it my conscience isn't bothered, I can watch it.
Right. So this, but like every other show that we watch, it's like a murder per episode. You know, there's a murder at the beginning. It's the same formula. There's a murder at the beginning. The investigator gets involved. You go through three or four suspects where you think you're convinced at different points that each one is the murderer. And then at the end of the show, they reveal who it is. And there's this cathartic moment. And the person goes to jail. Well, that's like one per episode. This is one killing per 13 episode season.
And we're not even sure if it's actually done because we decided after the season 13th finale episode, we got to take a break. We got to stop. We need sleep at night. And I need to be able to, my mind needs to stop churning about this mystery. But we're not sure if it's actually done.
Yeah. I mean, it's there is no resolution necessarily, even though you think that they've gotten the killer. And it is just, it is so intense. And every episode, it caused me to be late to work twice in 1 week. I mean, late to my construction job because we were up so late watching episode after episode. And I would beg you'd say, we've got to be done.
I've got to go to sleep. So actually, there were some episodes where I fell asleep because I just couldn't stay up anymore.
Oh, I was wide-eyed every moment. They were so good. It's very well written. It's very well done. It's kind of like Wallander too.
It is.
It's similar. It's kind of dark. Mm-hmm. But
And they don't show a lot of violence in the sense that there are some shows out there that are very popular, like CSI and other stuff like that, where they just show a lot of stuff.
It's gratuitous.
And you know, I just can't handle all of that. This, you know that it was bad, and you know that it was, you know, very awful for the families to go through, but you know, it's more intrigue and suspense, and I like that. I like the chase.
Yeah, it's really good. So check it out on Netflix. It's called The Killing. Like Rebecca said, we are believers and we love Jesus,
but we also like good mysteries.
We love good murder mysteries, and this one's a really good murder mystery. I think that's all we've got for this week. Hopefully you enjoyed this. If you want to get a hold of us, you can send an email to beckandbry@aol.com. Let us know what you think. We're hopefully going to have this up on iTunes and different places. If you want to check out my blog, it's where you can read some blog posts. Mostly it's audio from sermons that I've preached at our church, Emmaus Christian Church. You can go to that at thisliminalstate.com. It's thisliminalstate.com. You can check that out, or you can check out our church at emmauschristianchurch.org. Hopefully we'll have more different ways to contact us in the future. And Rebecca's going to be working on a blog in the future as well.
Yeah, it's Brian's listens to a ton of podcasts, and he does a lot of driving, so it's a great opportunity for him to kind of just sit and listen. And but I like to write. I'm a big journaler, and just, you know, something that, you know, maybe I'd like to step into. So we'll see. But we'll let you know when that happens.
All right. Well, sounds good. Anything else?
No. Nope.
We'll come up with a tagline at some point, because we got to have a tagline.
Oh, okay. Brian knows about these things. I don't.
Yeah, all podcasts have to have a good tagline.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, thanks for listening. If you've made it this far, and hope to see you again soon. All right.
Take care.